Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's NOOM.com to sign up for your trial today.
Welcome to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina. Acknowledge me. And as always, I'm joined by my buddy, Scott Chu. How's it going there, Scott?
It's going pretty good. I'm dropping my oldest son off at camp this week, so the wife and I won't be outnumbered for five and a half days. So that's going to be something new. But other than that, you know, just enjoying this beautiful Michigan weather. It's 68 degrees and rainy. Wow. Mm-hmm.
And rainy? Okay, so, I was going to say if it's 68 and sunny, that's a tremendous break beautiful. From the usual heat that we get in the summer.
Wet and gross.
Mm. Yeah, New York, we had a couple of straight weeks of heat and humidity, and then we got a reprieve from it, a few days of some sunny weather, low humidity, and temperatures like in the mid-80s. So we got a little bit of a reprieve. But hey, you know, we're in August. We're recording this August 6th at about 11:42 a.m. Eastern time. And it's officially the dog days of summer, Scott. This is when, some players really start to grind. You know, it's a long season.
Yeah, and I think throughout the season, I have been asked to rate a specific player that this has come up for me is actually Corbin Carroll, not because of anything to do with how Corbin Carroll is playing, but because this is Corbin Carroll's first full season in the major leagues. Right. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying he will necessarily have like a slump later on. We actually saw him go through one somewhat recently, but mm-hmm. it is something to keep in mind. It's especially these young players, the minor league season is not this long, right? It's basically they don't play for September. That's why we have September call-ups, because they're not playing anymore and they want to keep them playing. So I'm not saying like there's not really anything you can do about it, but it's something to keep in mind. Like if you see one of these young players really struggle in September, keep in mind that is one of the variables. Like just because a player is struggling doesn't mean it's because they've had like skill degradation or pitchers have figured him out. He might just be exhausted. Right.
That's like an interesting
again,
take, yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we see this with pitchers all the time and we say, oh yeah, pitchers, you know, they got tired out towards the end of the season, but we don't think about it with hitters, but it's not that different for them. Right. Mm-hmm. It's a different scale. But like, we don't talk about games caps for hitters, but their body still wears down over the course of a season. Again, nothing you can really do about it. Just something to keep in mind when you're projecting forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just to continue on that vein in a little bit, just like hot and cold players, one guy I'll just talk to you, then we'll get to the rest of what's on our rundown. But Michael Harris has been like on a tear lately, you know, for a long time, you know, for the past month, batting 375, only a couple of home runs, but, you know, the splits that he had, split problems. I think he had issues hitting against left-handed pitching last year. He doesn't have them anymore. Pretty evenly productive against both right-handed pitching, left-handed pitching, and got off to a real slow start. But, you know, with that stacked Braves lineup, the guy's still batting ninth every day. So you talk about the hot and cold players, and, you know, this guy's really coming on as the season has progressed.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It kind of looks like he's going to end up with very similar numbers that he had last season, despite mm-hmm. playing in like 20 more games. It's going to just kind of work out that way. He's going to really threaten 2020 in terms of home runs and stolen bases. If, you know, he might fall a little bit short of the 20 home runs again, just depends on whether he gets another power surge or not. I mean, he just hit two home runs the other night, so we'll see. What I like about Michael Harris is that he's adapting and he's found a way to sort of be productive. Last season, StatCast and, you know, the StatCast data, both that we have on PitcherList and that you can find on Baseball Savant, suggested that maybe he was a little fortunate last season, Michael Harris, that he had some, you know, he had some batted ball luck, and that might have attributed to some, like, why he was pretty, you know, quite a bit better than his expected WOBA. This season, they actually two are exactly in sync in terms of the Savant data, which is kind of interesting. What we're seeing from Michael Harris is that he's striking out less and he's walking a bit more. Now, he's never going to walk a lot. Mm-hmm. Michael Harris is an aggressive hitter, and that is actually part of the streakiness. So there's, when we talk about aggressive hitters, I think the first thing that comes to mind for people are strikeout guys, Javi Baez guys, right? Swing at everything, swing and miss. But there's actually aggressive hitters who don't strike out a lot. They just run into a ton of weak contact. Michael Harris is one of those guys that when he slumps, it doesn't look like a 35% strikeout rate. What it looks like is a 20 to 25% strikeout rate with terrible X stats. Why? Ooh. Because he's hitting the ball poorly. He's attacking things that he really shouldn't be attacking. He's making poor decisions. He's putting balls in play that just should have been taken. Right. Another player that's like this, who's actually sort of on the other end of the spectrum, he's slumping right now. It's Austin Hayes of the Orioles. Yeah. Austin Hayes is another guy who doesn't strike out a lot, but he is very aggressive in that he will put balls in play that he really shouldn't. And neither of these guys are like Luis Arias, who doesn't matter what you throw him, he finds a way to plop it over the second baseman or the shortstop. These two guys, you know, when they hit bad pitches, they tend to have bad contact. And rolls to an infielder or pops out, you know, the right fielder barely moves and it's all over, right? So that's what we see. Michael Harris really kind of getting in the groove of things. Wouldn't be super shocked if we saw like a little slump at some point, but again, not because he's getting worse, but because this is just how baseball works, right? Guys get hot, then they get cold. The dream of the consistent player is really kind of a myth, right? We call them rolling charts because they all go up and down. None of them are flat, right? What the real kind of the key is like, how high are the highs? How low are the lows? And what's the space between them, right? Like how long do each last? How volatile do they go from one to the other? These kinds of things, right? So it's just a good example of it. I think what I'll really be looking for from Michael Harris is to continue to see that bottom out just get higher and higher, right? Like, where's the low point? I want to see that low point get a little bit better. It's okay if the ceiling comes down just a little bit. What I'm really concerned about is that floor. I need that floor to be higher. The other problem for him, as you mentioned, he's batting ninth. I don't see that changing, right? Last season, Atlanta hit him ninth pretty much the whole season, and they didn't even have Ronald Acuna Jr. to lead off, right? They just didn't do that with Michael Harris. He had a chance at the beginning of the year to bat second. He lost that because of that long slump. I don't see him getting that back. So expect Harris to stay at the bottom of the order. He's hit fine from there. What it really does is take away plate appearances. It feels like a plate appearance a day. It doesn't actually account for that for quite that many, but you know, it's several plate appearances a week, which in Roto isn't that big of a deal as long as he's hitting. In points, it can make a difference.
Sure.
So I'm not going to drop him in points, but it's why in points leagues, you'll see, especially a player like me, tell you that, like, I really don't like guys that hit ninth, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, with Harris, the talent is there. But other guys who hit ninth that, you know, are no longer hot, I drop them like a sack of hammers. Ezekiel Duran being one, right? He's a guy who he's batting ninth and he's cold and he's platooned. He's out. Right. Because
agreed.
The margin for error when you bat ninth is just nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Michael Harris, over his last 140 games spanning into last season, 20 homers, 21 stolen bases, .291 batting average. So far this season, 86 games, 11 homers, 13 stolen bases. And I'll tell you that Braves lineup just so deep. And, you know, we don't have to spend any time on him at all, but I'll just bring him up. Matt Olson, I have him on my TGFBI team. Every time I look, he's hitting a home run lately. I mean, you know, we talk about Ohtani. It seems that every other day he's hitting a home run as well. But when you look at Matt Olson, 38 home runs, 94 RBI on the season, first 108 games, and just tearing the cover off the ball.
Oh, and Austin Riley has really turned it around here in the second half. I mean, he's been outstanding. I mean, this really, like, there are guys in this lineup who aren't hitting well, but they're the guys. I talk about aggressive hitters. This one strikes out more. Like, Eddie Rosario has found moments of relevance throughout the season. Like, yeah. Don't get attached. I'm not really that into him or Marcell Ozuna. Marcell Ozuna is a better player than Eddie Rosario. But, for example, Eddie Rosario, he's a guy who, you know, he swings the bat every time. And when he's hot, he's unbelievable. Because everything seems like it's leaving the park. And then pitchers remember they don't actually have to throw him strikes. And then they stop doing it. And you see kind of stretches like this. But yeah, this lineup is deep. If Marcell Ozuna, or sorry, not Marcell Ozuna, if Michael Harris was going to move up in the order, you could see him get up to seventh or something like that. Maybe sixth. I think they like Ozuna's power there. The problem is I don't think Atlanta is into that. They seem to like the concept of two leadoff guys. Using the one and the nine. I hate it for fantasy because batting ninth is not what I like, but I would be stunned if Michael Harris got a chance to hit anywhere else, right? Because Ozzie Albies is not coming out of the two spot, right? Austin Riley, Matt Olson, Sean Murphy, that's your 3, 4, 5. And then you've got Ozuna, Rosario, Arcia, and Harris. So that's, I mean, that's kind of the thing with Harris is there's just nowhere else for him to really hit when you consider Atlanta's philosophy on how they structure this lineup. So I don't expect that to change. The only thing I'll say, you know, for real baseball purposes is that I love this lineup. It's deep, but the bench is awful. Like, they have a backup catcher, but like Nicky Lopez, Kevin PR, Pilar, and Forrest Wall, who I've never actually heard of. those are the guys on the bench, but they also never play, right? Like the four of those guys over the last six games have combined three starts. Right. Two of them are Darnell playing, you know, being a catcher. Sure. So that's interesting. This team is really reliant on the starting nine.
Right, right. And, you know, that their core is signed to team-friendly long-term contract. So I get what you're saying about their, you know, bench depth, but, you know, just from a perspective, a real life perspective, as long as everyone stays healthy, they're going to be playing together for a long time. They're going to be a really good competitive team for a long time as well. They're running away with the NL East, but yeah, so let's move on from here. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the MLB trade deadline activity that went on. I mean, tons of activity, a lot of it, you know, pitching wise, and we'll focus more on a few of the hitters that got moved and talk about how their fantasy outlook changed based on their new teams and whatnot. But wanted to start off with talking about the Rays promoting Curtis Meade, one of their top prospects, third baseman who's played a bunch of minor league games at second base as well and some at first base. He was called up because, unfortunately, Shane McClanahan, their starting pitcher, has a forearm injury, experienced some forearm soreness, so there was an opening on the roster. But you got to like what you see from Curtis Meade based on his minor league stats. Had a 12.8% walk rate in AAA this season, just a 14.7% K rate for the season, 374 minor league career OBP, 302 lifetime batting average in the minor leagues. Home run power has waned a little bit. Some are thinking that it might be because of some recent injuries that he's had, but take a look at what some prospect analysts say about him. They think he might have eventually a 20-plus home run kind of bat. The only issue I have with him is, where's he going to play? I mean, he got the start at third base Saturday, went 0-for-3 with two strikeouts. But Isaac Paredes, we've talked about him a lot in this podcast. He's locked in at third base, having a career season. Brandon Lau has been heating up, and he's the Rays' second baseman. First base is covered by Yandy Diaz. Maybe, you know, Meade could find some at-bats as a DH. But, you know, I like his pedigree. I like, you know, his future. But I don't know if he's worth an ad in leagues right now.
Yeah, actually, so Meade had a slow start in AAA this year. I know he dealt with some injuries. It wasn't looking very good. I was surprised to see him get the call, actually, because even now he wasn't, you know, it's not like he was tearing the cover off the ball quite at the end. I mean, overall, he's got like a 107 WRC plus, so a fairly average AAA player. In terms of the results, I mean, not a ton of home runs, not a ton of steals. Over 46 games, he only had three of each. So, It's the Rays are a team that, you know, famously move guys around a lot. Mm-hmm. They not just in terms of position, they move them up and down the order. They platoon guys. They do a lot of weird stuff. So when I see Meade, I mean, he did get two starts in a row, right, against a righty and a lefty. He played third base for both of them. And the way it was interesting how the Rays dealt with that, because so they've had Isak Paredes as their everyday third baseman for quite some time. So what do they do on the 2 days that Meade comes in? Paredes played both games. He played second base and he played first base. Mm-hmm. And the way they dealt with that was one of those days when Paredes moved to first base, they moved Diaz to DH. And then when he went to second base, Brandon Lau got the day off because it was a lefty, right? So it's like, I can see how the Rays could get him in the lineup whenever they wanted. The question mm-hmm. is going to be, when is that? I think pretty reliably we'll see the righty Curtis Meade play against left-handed pitching. That's an easy one because you can move Paredes to second base, you can slide him in. I wonder if Meade gets, you know, I'm thinking maybe in, you know, 15 teamers, there might be some intrigue here if you really need, like, you know, you need a Hail Mary, because there are several lefties on this roster and one of them has been performing quite poorly lately, and that is Luke Raley. So Raley's an outfielder. You won't see Meade go to the outfield, but you could see, you know, players get shifted around so that we see Meade get DH, you know, DH at bats against lefties, or just whenever they don't feel like playing Luke Raley, who mm-hmm. I'll admit I did put him in my rankings. I was always hesitant to move him up, you know, to match his current performance because he's an aggressive strikeout hitter. He doesn't walk a ton. He walks, I mean, it's okay, but I was stunned at the results he was getting seemingly out of nowhere. I'm not saying that this slump is the real Luke Raley, but I also wouldn't expect him to return to the performance he had earlier this season, because that in itself was a surprise, mm-hmm. right? I think he can rebound. I just don't know what that rebound level will be. In 12 teamers with like three outfielders, I have moved on from Luke Raley in leagues that I had him, because you just can't, there's not really a need to be committed to these guys for that long. You know, interestingly, you know, Josh Lowe has turned it around a bit of late. He's been hitting much better over the last, you know, week or two, but he sits against all lefties, right? So, between Raley and Lowe, despite the fact they're both outfielders, that should open up, like, move things around, get some DH at bats for Curtis Meade. But to, you know, I say all that just to get to the point of in 12 teamers, I just don't care about Meade right now. I need to know he has an everyday role first. The big way for me was they played Meade at third base 2 days in a row and Paredes still played. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, he was the one I think that immediately stood to lose the most. I was like, are they going to, you know, have Paredes in a platoon at DH now? Cause Paredes is not a good fielder. I was worried that was going to happen and they just let him play other positions. So that's the key. I still really like Isak Paredes. I don't know how much longer he can continue to pull the ball at legendary rates, but he should be, you know, he is relevant in all leagues through the rest of the season until or unless we see Paredes sit more than once a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Curtis Meade and Yahoo leagues, which a lot of people play, second base, third base eligible. So if you do play in a deeper league and, you know, you need the flexibility to be able to start them or have daily lineup moves, you know, it might be somebody to look into. But let's move on to Davis Schneider, who was called up by the Toronto Blue Jays, second baseman, third baseman, outfielder throughout his minor league career. Bo Bichette got placed on the IL, has a knee injury. Supposedly it's not serious, but still hitting the IL. And, you know, the Jays made a move where they traded for Paul DeJong, and then they called up Schneider. So I love it. He hit a home run in his first at-bat in the big leagues. Love it when that happens. Played second base for the Jays on Saturday night, went 3-for-3. Interesting player. I think, again, maybe regular playing time is going to be an issue, but if he keeps hitting the ball, the Jays are going to keep his bat in the lineup. 18.4% walk rate and 21.9% K rate in 87 AAA games this season. If you look at his minor league career, really has improved his plate discipline over the past few seasons. And this season in AAA, his power really popped. 21 home runs, 64 RBI in 87 games. 253, 373, 463, triple slash in six minor league seasons. So batting average could be an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. I have very low expectations for Schneider. He was doing, of course, really, really well in the minor leagues. Mostly so far, I've been surprised that he's been playing, right? Mm-hmm. That he's been in the lineup because they, you know, I assumed that they would just let Whit Merrifield keep playing second base, but the way they decided to work out, the way they decided to work out this injury was Paul DeJong goes to, you know, play shortstop. Merrifield goes from second base to left field. Mm-hmm. And then they sort of, you know, put Schneider in at second base. It's weird. There's actually three guys on this bench who can play second base, Schneider, Biggio, and Espinal. They all can play second base. Second basemen are an interesting thing in the major leagues because generally speaking, second basemen aren't drafted. They're made out of shortstop prospects or third base prospects, either a third baseman with not a strong enough arm or a shortstop with not a strong enough arm, right? Generally, that's what we see. That's how guys come to play second base. Schneider is, again, he's not someone I'm super interested in 12-team leagues, right? If you've been streaming your second base or middle infield and just want to give it a whirl, go for it, right? There's more intrigue here, I think, in OBP because he does walk, but you know, the projections hate his strikeout rate. I thought it was better, you know, in the minor leagues, it was 18.4% walks, 21.9% strikeout rates. Even if you give it the old Scott Chu 5% bump, when you come to majors, that still puts him at, you know, a 26 to 27% strikeout rate. And that's fine. Right. And that's actually closer to what ATC has. The question of course will be things like batting average, really hard to project. He's actually, you know, it's off to an early start. So X stats, you can't really use, so like his EV is kind of driven on what, seven batted balls. Can't really look at that. I look at his minor league numbers. He does hit a lot of balls in the air. This is not a guy who hits ground balls. It's, you know, 48.7% this season. But wow, tons of infield flies, even in the minor leagues, right? In, you know, last season, it was, you know, it was high between AA and AAA. This season in AAA, it's still high, right? 13.6% infield fly balls, which obviously are always outs. I mean, always outs.
So, you think he's just over aggressive and that's what's causing him?
It's hard to say. So he pulls the ball a ton, right? So that's, I mean, that's classic power hitter kind of thing. And you know, we see that in the 21 home runs in 87 games. So, you know, he had a lot of line drives this season in the minors, and that helps batting average, right? Really over the last two seasons, he's had a line drive rate, you know, about 23% across AA and AAA. So if he can hit those line drives, he can have a better batting average. But, you know, I say all that about Schneider to say, I am expecting at some point, the low batting average will likely shine through because fly balls are often outs. Thankfully, he's a power hitter. And I mentioned this in the AMA. I talk about fly balls usually in the sense that I want guys to hit fly balls. Generally, I want power hitters to hit balls in the air, right? Yandy Diaz hitting fly balls, good thing because he's big and he's strong. But weak players, well, not weak, right? They're strong enough to be a major league player, but guys without home run power, you don't want them to hit balls up in the air. So Trey Turner, a good example of a player who's hitting too many fly balls, because when Trey Turner hits a fly ball, you don't really expect it to leave the park, right? So Schneider, I like that he's hitting fly balls. The question will be what happens to everything else, right? You can only expect about 1 in 5 of those fly balls at best to leave the yard. So we know that the other 4 out of 5 fly balls for Schneider are outs. We can just make that assumption, right? So what happens to everything else? Now, if he can hit line drives almost always go for hits, right? It's like 67% or something like that. Line drives go for hits. So if he can keep a line drive rate up above 20% to go with those fly balls, there could be a useful player there. But it's a little bit of wish casting, right? I need a lot of things to happen for David Schneider to be truly relevant in 12 teamers for more than a week or two. I know that's a lot to say. The most important part of all of this is please don't think that Paul DeJong is worth rostering in 12 teamers. He wasn't before. He's not now. He's a guy who will have one good month a season. One. And it's already happened. It's already happened. It's over. I do not expect anything really to happen for Paul DeJong, just because pitchers, he has a hard time adjusting in season. Once he cools off, he stays cold. Finally, about the Jays, hey, don't look now, Dalton Varsho doing a couple things recently, right? Like, not a ton. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say it's a ton, but the strikeout rates are really down over his last seven games, right? He only has two strikeouts in his last seven games. And in that time, he's got more hits than that. Not a lot of them, but he does have, he had a home run the other night. Maybe there's something. I've been asked a lot about what to do with Dalton Varsho, and I'll just keep saying the same thing. The upside on Varsho is immense, right? And the problem has been quality of contact. If you are in first place, or you're in, you know, if you're in first place, you can probably afford to keep holding Dalton Varsho to see if he explodes, because he is better than most catchers that are on the wire.
And ride the wave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can hold him for a little longer until you start getting close to the playoffs. And then you can finally start saying, okay, I'm done with this. Once there's a threat, you need that, you know, you need that roster spot. Then you say, okay, now you got to go. If you are in the middle of the pack, of course, you can't wait any longer. It doesn't matter how well we project Dalton Varsho going forward. You cannot wait. If either Contreras is on your wire, I'd go after that. Yonier Diaz is playing more than I expected him to with the return of Yordan Alvarez. He's a guy I'd go after. Francisco Alvarez is a, you know, a bat I'd chase if I needed power. But basically, you can convert that to a streaming catcher position if you are in more desperate need of production from catcher, right? So I don't want to give broad advice to everyone, because I still think that the upside is there for someone who is comfortable in their spot to say, I can wait, because he could turn it on. Would it be that weird if he was the best catcher in, you know, from mid-August on? No, I don't think that would surprise anybody. I mean, it would in the sense that he's been so bad this year, but you know, coming into the season, I think we all thought that was a very realistic possibility. Projection systems still really like him. So with Dalton Varsho, hold if you absolutely can, but in, you know, if you're in the middle of the pack, let him go. And, you know, the other thing to remember is that for players, or for folks that are playing keeper or dynasty leagues, Dalton Varsho will not be a catcher anymore, and his relevance is going to change dramatically, right? Because there aren't many catchers who can do what he does, right? He can hit home runs. He could threaten 20 home runs, right? He can get 15, you know, to 17 stolen bases. There's like no catchers really anymore who can do that. There's plenty of outfielders who can do that, and they can do it without hitting 215.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I think this is a good spot for us to take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about Trevor Story and updates on his status. And we'll also take a look at some of the players who were moved at the trade deadline, take a look at a few Cub players. We'll talk about all of that right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. Joe Galina and Scott Chu. You could follow me at Joe Galina on the X, and you could follow this guy, Scott Chu, on the X at If the Chu Fits. I still call it Twitter, though. I don't know. I just can't stop. I don't know about you.
Does anyone not call it Twitter? I mean, like between two people, two friends, I don't think any of us call it the X, right?
Like, it's the first time I said it, really, but I just thought it, you know, just.
Yeah, how did it feel, Joe?
It felt weird. I don't know if I'll ever do it again.
Yeah. The X makes it sound like Dodgeball the Ocho, right?
What did we say last week? Social media app formerly known as Twitter, you know,
which feels less weird than saying the S, to be honest. Right.
All right. So before we took our first break, I teased we were going to talk about Trevor Story. By the way,
when it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
You had mentioned, you know, about the, you know, baseball players being weak and whatnot, you know, that they're not weak because they're baseball players. And did you see that little scuffle between Jose Ramirez and Tim Anderson Saturday's game? I think the Ramirez just knocked him, not out, but knocked him down. Did you see the highlight from that?
I did. And, you know, Tim Anderson hasn't shown a lot of power this season. Did not show a lot of power in that fight. He can make contact. He can make contact. The power's not there yet.
Right. Yeah, still has that one home run. All right. So Trevor Story, right? You know, it's time if you haven't, you know, if you need help at middle infield spot to look for him on your waiver wire, because maybe playing some baseball in a ballpark near you real soon. Remember, he's been out all season long, underwent an internal bracing procedure on his throwing elbow. He's been playing for the Red Sox, minor league affiliates, AA and AAA for almost a month now. His rehab assignment will end on Wednesday. Remember, we're recording this on Sunday, August 6th. And because his rehab's going to end because I think there's a 20-day window when non-pitchers have to complete their assignments, their rehab assignments. So as of Sunday morning, Story has 43 plate appearances between the Red Sox's AA and AAA affiliates, 270 batting average, 3 home runs, 3 doubles, 7 RBI. Good to see the power back, and should be looking for him, you know, on the waiver wire. No?
Yeah, but I really, you know, I've been telling people for quite some time, got to keep the expectations down.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Trevor, you don't have to put him in your lineup right away, but it's, you
know. I mean, even so, performance hasn't been a huge issue the last couple of seasons, because even though, you know, he actually surprisingly he's been more durable, I think, than he's sort of felt, if that makes any sense. You know, Trevor Story's been in the league since 2016. He's always been like banged up, but he'd only miss like, you know, 15 games. Right. So every season he would miss like 15 games. And then finally he had this big injury after he, you know, after he goes to Boston. Here's the thing, right? Like, the strikeout rate was really high last season. Of course, I like seeing the lower strikeout rate in AAA. He's only striking out a little less than 22% of the time in AAA. So even if you give it the bump, it should still be like manageable for Trevor Story. The reason I say to be hesitant is because this is not a guy who sounds like he's super healthy, right? It was actually his choice. I mean, they had talked about if he would come up early because he's been looking good, playing well. He asked to stay on that rehab assignment for as long as possible, mm-hmm. right? You know, I think there's a lot of people that thought he might have come back over the weekend, and he still was like, no, I really want to get, you know, loose in AAA. And again, that's not like a diagnosis. It's just, you know, usually players are, you know, they want to end their rehab. Like, I don't need no rehab, right?
I don't need no stinking rehab. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. And I'm really curious to see if the plan for Boston is to give him routine days off. Right. So, I think Boston isn't under some delusion that they're going to make the playoffs. They're not mathematically eliminated, but it's a very uphill fight for Boston to make it to the playoffs. They kind of stood pat mostly at the deadline. They didn't trade any of the pieces I really thought they would. They acquired Luis Urias for some reason. But fine, he's actually been the one playing second base. So, you know, Story would probably come in and play. He was a second baseman last season. I wonder if Story would come in to play shortstop, his old position, in place of the, you know, sort of soft hitting Yu Chang, who's been the shortstop for quite a bit for Boston. He might play.
Maybe second base might be better for him. Shorter throw. No.
Yeah, he could. He could.
Especially
absolutely.
With it coming off on your throw. You know, you have a big injury on your throwing.
And Urias can play second. He actually, Urias is a versatile guy. He can play third base. He can play shortstop. He can play second base. So we could see that happen. Again, the real question is, how often will he play?
Right.
Right. Like, how often are they going to let him play? How often is he going to get days off? That's where my real hesitation is. It's, you know, I think while he plays, we have enough projection systems to say, like, yeah, you know, he's showing some power. We have reason to believe the power will still be there. The batting average might be a little more suspect than it used to be just because he's getting older. But, you know, is he going to play every day? So I think he is worth rostering. I think the thing you'll have to do is within 2 weeks, you're going to need to make a decision. Because right now, for a lot of folks, he's free, right? He's just sitting on their IL waiting for him to get called up. But after he gets called up, he's going to take up a real roster spot. And again, if you're in first place, I think it's something you can sit on. If you're in dynasty, of course, you don't really have to make any decisions, but redraft players are going to have to decide pretty quickly, is Trevor Story playing enough to keep, and is it worth the risk, right? He's not someone that I'm putting in my top 10 or 12 at second base when he returns. He'll probably be, you know, when he debuts on the list, which will be this, you know, this coming week, this Wednesday, he'll probably make it in the list, but he'll be in that last tier because of the risk. Not because I don't think he has upside, but because he has massive risk. So that's really kind of where we're at. I know this is like a very long non-answer to what I think about Trevor Story, but I think he has upside to be very relevant in 12-team leagues, and I think that there's very real chance that he does not play enough to recognize that sort of potential.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about some of the trade deadline moves that took place, and we'll talk about your hitter list as well. First of all, I just wanted to ask you, and I know we're more of a hitter-centric podcast, but Eduardo Rodriguez, the Tigers – worked out a deal where they were going to move him to the Dodgers, and he used his no trade clause and decided to stay with the Tigers. I'm just curious more than anything. You know, I read that, you know, he's had some family issues last year, had to take a leave of absence, you know, to deal with some family issues. And the speculation was that, you know, he wanted to keep from moving his family across the country. But what's the take in Detroit right now? Are fans behind him? Is the team kind of, you know, playing the hand in terms of, like, are they upset with him, or what's the feeling that you sense?
So just like in regular life, right, when someone says they need to do what's best for their family, I think you take that at face value, and I don't think anyone can really begrudge someone for turning down a job offer on the other side, you know, on the other side of the country, because they don't think it's in the best interest of their family. I think when Eduardo Rodriguez had to basically take a leave from the team, he barely talked to the Tigers during that leave. And the Tigers were incredibly supportive of him for the same reason. They said, this man needs to do what's best for his family. And he stepped away, and we're going to keep moving on. Right. We are not shunned. He was not shunned. He was not anything. He was welcomed back with open arms. So I think it would have been nice for the Tigers to get something for him. Of course, the contract for Erod, I don't think the return was going to be that big. Right. Because Erod has that opt out at the end of this season, I believe. So, you know, how much would you really get for him? The Tigers don't really have a good track record in acquiring prospects for pitchers. They finally cut the last of the return for the Justin Verlander trade, which was a pitcher who never made it to the big leagues. So, you know, I don't begrudge him one bit. It's, you know, it stinks. It would have been nice. I'm stunned they got something for Michael Lorenzen. That's great. They got a return for Michael Lorenzen, a guy who was a true, let's hope we can trade him free agent ad. Right. So, you know, I think there are people in Detroit who are frustrated. And I am not one of those people, because, again, this man decided to do what's best for his family. I take him at his word. I think he probably really liked the way the Tigers handled his family emergency. I think that might not be if something like that were to happen again while he was in LA, I don't think it would have been quite so warm. Right. At least not from the fan base. Right. So, I don't blame it. It was a surprise to the teams. I think at first I don't know what those conversations were, but I think there was some shock. So usually no trade clauses are just leverage, right? It's, yeah, okay, I'll do it if you give me this, right? You know, I want to make sure, you know, I want to make sure my contract gets extended, or I want to, you know, get something to give up. You know, basically I have something, and if I'm going to give it up, you're going to give me something in return. I think in this case, it really was, he did not want to go to the West Coast.
Right.
Not because, I mean, there's more to life than winning and losing, right? Mm-hmm. I know that's hard for some folks, but there is more to life than winning than, to winning and losing. E-Rod already has a World Series ring. Right. So like he's done it before. Again, long story short, I take him at his word. He wanted to do what was best for his family. And I can't think of any good reason to begrudge a man for doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's been through so much really lately as well. Remember during COVID, not only did he get COVID, but he had that heart issue that was associated with COVID, maybe still is. I'm not sure. Hopefully, you know, that's not an issue for him anymore. But the guy has had, you know, had it pretty rough lately. So I was just curious to see.
God forbid he stay in one place for a little while.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's take a look at some of the moves that took place hitter-wise. I mean, there were tons of pitchers being moved, lots of activity with bullpen pitchers and the new closers and whatnot. But let's stick to the couple of hitters. And here's a guy that is not on your hitter list, Josh Bell going to the Marlins. And, you know, he's been slumping for a long time, but the Marlins hoping that he has something left. And in his first four games for them, went 5-for-15, home run, double, 3-run score, 3 RBI, 4 walks. Not even on your taxi squad there, Scott. But you look at, you know, 2019, the year of the live ball, had 37 home runs, 116 RBI, and it's just gone downhill power-wise since then. In 21, hit 27 homers. In 22, hit 17 home runs. And now in 101 games, in this season, 12 home runs. So hits lots of ground balls, only 30. Is he anything more than something that fantasy managers should keep on their watch list at this stage?
So obviously I'm not a huge fan of Josh Bell. We've played this game before. He has yet outside of really 2019 and 2021. Those were two seasons where he had strong seasons, 37 home runs and 27 home runs. And of course, like way back in 2017, he, you know, had some success when he was still a Pirate. But the guy, I mean, in OBP leagues, he would certainly be like taxi squad, maybe back end of the list kind of guy. But in batting average leagues, I mean, this is just not a guy who has put up any kind of consistent, you know, he just like can't perform consistently. He goes on these hot streaks for a short period of time and then falls off completely. He had a good first half of the season when he was still in Washington last year, went to the Padres and of course was terrible.
Oh, he tanked.
Right? Yeah. Really, mm-hmm. Since leaving the Nationals, he's not really shown us anything, mm-hmm. right? Like he has not shown us a single thing that makes me say, yeah, I want to chase this. I would much rather go after a lot of the other options at first base. Like it's not like there's a ton of first basemen out there that are like, you know, real game changers, but like is Josh Bell a top 20 first baseman in fantasy? Like, I think that's a real debate, right? Because mm-hmm. then you have to think about, you know, Isak Paredes, you know, can Spencer Steer make a rebound? Can CJ Cron make a rebound? Spencer Torkelson, you know, he's slumping again. What can happen with him? Carlos Santana has done a lot of the things that we kind of wanted Josh Bell to do, which is take walks and hit home runs, mm-hmm. right? Brandon Drury just came back, right? We've seen young players like Christian Encarnacion Strand come up. So why hold Bell, who has a very capped ceiling, when you can go after any of those guys, right? Mm-hmm. You know, he's someone that you might stream in good matchups, but otherwise, you know, give me the Alec Bohms and the, you know, CJ Crones, who I'm not a huge fan of either, but like, give me those guys, Brandon Drury, give me that. Like, I just don't see how Bell makes much of a difference from those guys. Like except I don't think he has the same ceiling as like Brandon Drury, who's also eligible at second and third, or Spencer Steer, who's first third outfield, or CJ Cron, who we've seen hit lots of home runs recently, mm-hmm. right? It's just, I just can't get that excited about Josh Bell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to talk about CJ Cron and Randall Grichuk, who got traded to the Angels. But first, I'll just, since we were talking about the Marlins, you know, really trying to build up on some of their power hitters. And, you know, Jake Berger, I didn't realize that he had 26 home runs so far this season. But to me, he looks like Joey Gallo, light, right? A home run, a bust, you know, so far, 26 home runs, batting .214 with just about a 31% strikeout rate this season. So, you know, I mean, obviously not a guy that you're going to want to roster on many fantasy teams at this stage, right?
Very niche guy in terms of his fantasy utility. Yes, home runs are there, but like RBI and runs kind of aren't because the way it works out for him is, you know, Jake Berger is the quintessential aggressive power hitter, right? And that means highs and lows. The thing about Berger that's made him so tough to roster this season, and anyone who's done it will tell you, he has these blistering hot streaks that last like a week or two. Mm-hmm. And then he is just unplayable for 3 to 4 weeks at a time. I mean, the White Sox platooned him. They got tired. This guy, I mean, he strikes out a ton, hits a lot of bad balls. And then just, it's honestly the closest I can come to like describing what the performance has been like is like Christopher Morel, this kind of just erratic, like hot, then cold. Like by the time you realize he's hot again, you've missed like half the streak because you missed him for 3 days kind of thing. He's really difficult to roster. It's got to be a daily league. It's got to be one where you just don't care about ratios anymore because he's a massive tank. Like he's a massive drag on any ratio except for slugging, right? Slugging and then like technically, if you're playing OPS, like he has a decent OPS just because of the slugging. Right. But yeah, so I don't love that he went to a much more difficult park to hit home runs in. He was in a very ideal situation. And while the lineup for the Marlins is better, the top of the White Sox lineup, like where he was hitting behind Eloy and behind Lewis Robert, like it's not like he's getting a huge upgrade by going to the Marlins. So he might get a couple more RBI, but then, you know, of course, can he hit more home runs? Man, he's so streaky. I think you brought up Joey Gallo, but Joey Gallo walked, right? He had this floor that Berger does not have. He doesn't walk. So I would actually compare him more to like, Adam Duvall.
Wow.
Okay. Power hitter doesn't walk. We saw Adam Duvall in April be the best hitter in baseball until he went down, right? And now he's barely playable. That's the kind of player I sort of see Jake Berger as right now. I'm not saying he can't change. And, you know, I really like the ownership in Miami. I like that they've been able to develop players. Could they find a way for Jake Berger to be better than he is in a way the White Sox could not? Yes, because the White Sox do not care that guys strike out. Right. It's just not a concern of theirs. They will let Lewis Robert and other guys strike out as much as they want. So Miami might fix that a little bit. But again, another reason it was weird is because Miami has players like this. Like what is Jorge Soler, if not a bit more consistent Jake Berger? Right. What is Jesus Sanchez, but a left-handed Jake Berger? Right. Like it was kind of weird to me that they decided to go this route, but they did. It looks like he's going to play every day. As their third baseman, he did get sat recently against a righty just here on Saturday. So I'm going to kind of keep an eye on how often that happens. But he continues to be this fringe, if you need power, corner infielder.
So before we take our second break, real quick, does the trade of CJ Cron and Randall Grichuk back to the Angels? Remember, Grichuk was a first round pick, pick ahead of the Angels. I believe they had back-to-back first round picks, and they picked Grichuk and then they picked Mike Trout back in the day. But does this move the needle on either of these guys coming back to the Angels organization?
They left Colorado. At least when they were in Colorado, there were week to week and a half stretches where I probably wanted, you know, where I was interested as a stream, right? Randall Grichuk has not really been able to produce in Colorado consistently. So I don't see how we can expect a lot of consistency in LA. Grichuk is at his best was a not very durable power hitter who didn't walk, but had okay batting averages because he hits the ball really hard. He's not someone I'm interested in 12 team leagues, even with five outfield. If he's on a roster, it should be because you're streaming him until you find something better. I just don't think Grichuk is going to be someone that makes a difference long-term. He has playing time. That's about it.
No.
And with Crone, I am kind of interested in Crone because while he does leave a very enticing situation in Colorado, at least he's hitting behind Ohtani. Right. And then when Mike Trout returns, which will send Grichuk back to wherever it is they want to put him, he'll likely hit behind Trout as well. So Crone could be an RBI source going forward. He's not hitting well quite yet. At least been okay. I think with Crone, he is someone who, I like him more than, I like him more than Josh Bell. Right. I'd take Crone over Bell because I think Crone is in a better situation. And Crone is someone, again, who has been very relevant the past few seasons. 28 home runs in 2021, 29 home runs in 2022. You might bring that home run upside down just a little bit because he's not in Colorado. But, I do think he's a guy who could hit like 250-ish and hit maybe, 7-8 more home runs. And really just give you some RBI juice just from hitting behind Ohtani and then Ohtani and Trout.
Yeah. Well, since Crone was with the Angels back in the day, it's more, enticing, a better hitter park for left-handed hitters, right? Because they change the dimensions a little bit, right, there. So I guess we'll see. Grichuk, yeah, I see what you're saying. Not really interested in him much. But, I guess there's that theory that batters that play in Colorado, they have that issue where there's the difference in playing in high altitude and then having to get used to playing in lower altitudes. Maybe it'll be something that'll restart his career, but I'm not jumping to add Grichuk.
That's an important thing to point out, that the Coors effect works both ways. It makes them better at home. It makes them worse on the road because pitches move differently. But even overall, right? In theory, it should kind of balance itself out. It should make a guy less, in theory, it would make a guy less streaky, but Grichuk was not good last season, right? He played 140 games, 19 home runs, hit 259, which is fine, with very mediocre run, very mediocre RBI, hitting in the middle of the order for the Rockies. So, what exactly are we supposed to be excited about? Right, what is it that I expect Grichuk to do, right? We've seen Grichuk play quite, he's had a long career, and he's at his best, he's been other than 2019, of course, because it's 2019, he is a low to mid 20s home run bat with a 250 batting average. That is just a guy in 12 team leagues, right? There's tons of those, various flavors and, various skill sets, but there's tons of guys who can create that kind of production. Grichuk is batting at the bottom of the order for the Angels. He's, he had one game where he hit fourth. That was a little interesting, but, eighth and ninth the last two games. I'm just going to need to see a lot more before I care at all.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's take our last break of the podcast. When we come back, we'll talk about the Cubs, who added a third baseman. And we'll integrate that in terms of players that have moved up your hitter list as well. Cubs are really hot and an interesting team to watch in the second half as the last couple months of the season progress. And we'll talk about all of that right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Joe Galina and Scott Chu with you. The Cubs traded for, is it Jaime or Jamer Candelario, Scott? Because he's a former Tiger.
I do believe it's Jamer.
Okay. So Jamer Candelario to the Cubs. Nationals had to move him really basically because he was on a one-year contract, going to be a free agent at the end of the season. They weren't going to re-sign him. But 29-year-old switch hitter, traded back to the Cubs. I forgot that he was part of the organization back in the day. Basically batting towards the bottom of the lineup, though, batted seventh in their lineup. I think earlier in his career, especially when he was a Tiger, a lot was expected of him. But basically what he's turned out to be is a guy that could hit upwards of 20 home runs, 70 RBI. That's basically his 162-game average. But has really been on a tear since the trade. In his first five games with the Cubbies, batting 579, 11 hits in his first 19 at-bats, scored 8 runs. So Cubs are an interesting team. But give me your take on Candelario in Chicago.
Yeah, he was actually a key piece of the Nick Castellanos trade for the Tigers. That he was the main return, and he actually worked out fine, right? He was a decent player. And what, up until coming to the Cubs, the real calling card for Jamer Candelario, who is having the best season of his career, just kind of overall, he's like 2 home runs away from his career high in home runs. He is, you know, striking out less than ever. He has a good batting average, not quite as good as the one he had in 2020, but that was only, you know, 52 games. But with Jamer Candelario, what he's been up till now is sort of this low end accumulator. He was a guy that would hit, you know, third or fourth on a bad team, but still had plenty of RBI opportunities because he was getting plenty of at bats in the middle of an order. Eventually you'll get these, you know, you'll get these counting stats. And a guy who was probably, until now, I never thought he was going to hit 20 home runs. Right. But here he is having, you know, the best full season of his career right now, 104 games, 17 home runs, 6 stolen bases, something that, you know, kind of weird, but really I think just a function of the new rules and the fact that he was a National. I don't expect that so much with the Cubs. Hitting 274, batting average isn't necessarily too surprising. He's a career 246 hitter, but he's sort of this slappy guy who, you know, he had a 271 average back in 2021 with the Tigers when he was, you know, fairly relevant. Candelario is, it's weird because his ceiling is quite low. The ceiling is what you've seen, really, with Jamer Candelario. He just doesn't, he never was seen as a guy with big power. He was never seen as a guy with speed. He was just a guy with okay power and a hit tool. And he's shown us that, right? He makes contact. It's nice to see him go. So I don't think you're going to see a huge change to his counting stats, despite the fact that he's dropped to like sixth. It looks like he's batting sixth today, Sunday, for the Cubs. But I think, you know, the biggest thing with Candelario is I don't think you're going to see a huge change in the counting stats, because while he is dropping down the order, he's going to a better team. Right? A significantly better offense that's much hotter than the Nationals have been. So I think you can continue to get these, you know, okay counting numbers in. And the rest of it is just like, how much longer can he keep doing this? Right? Is it possible that Jamer Candelario, you know, who's, you know, a little over 29 and a half years old, has found something new to his game? It's possible. Right? The results suggest maybe that's happening, but I don't see enough of anything else happening to say like, yeah, that's it. Right? I mean, the expected stats are pretty much in line with they've been in recent seasons. He's pulling the ball a little more than last year, but not that much more than he did in years past. Right? He's hitting the ball up in the air a little bit more, but not much. He's hitting some line drives, but not as many as he did in years past. There's not like a single thing I can point to and say, oh, that's it. That's the thing that he's doing now, right? And it's always nice when you get that, because it's like, oh yeah, like this makes sense. I have a cause for this reaction. Right. But honestly, all I've really seen is that he's hitting fastballs better, right? And like, that's cool, but I need to see more than that to believe that a significant change has happened, because he's been up and down against fastballs throughout his career. He was terrible against them last year. He was good against them in 2020 and 2021. Terrible against them in 2019. It's weird and fairly random for him. So it's got to be more than that. I'm not saying he's going to slump or something's going to fall out. I mean, guys can be good for a year. And it's not as though he's like super outperforming his past years. He's just been doing it a little bit better. So, you know, I think he could end the season with like 20, 22 to 25 home runs, depending on how hot he stays. I think the batting average at worst will be in, you know, even during his slumps, it's never that low. You know, he should at least bat 250, maybe closer to 260, 265 for the rest of the season. But, you know, he's someone that you've been playing. He's been a good stopgap for you at third base, but he's not someone I'm looking at in keeper dynasty to try to get a hold of. He's not, you know, Jamer Candelario is just not someone who I ever think is going to be this guy that's like, yes, this is exciting. The, you know, he's a guy who I can project for 25 home runs in a season. He might get there this season, but I don't think we'll ever project him for that. So he is a good back end third base, okay corner infield in deeper 12-team formats, obviously in 15-team formats. In 10-teamers, which a lot of people still play, he's someone who I'm playing for now. Right. And then someone else might get hot and I'll want them. So, you know, it's just all this to say he is a high floor, fairly low ceiling player who's playing close to the ceiling this year.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Cubs are a fun team this season. Fun story there. All of a sudden, you know, you got in the NL Central, the Reds have a 5-game losing streak and the Cubs are in third place behind the Brewers, who are in first, and then the Reds are in second. They're only 2.5 games out of first entering Sunday's action. And you look at this lineup up and down, and you know they've a few of these guys have made some moves on your hitter list. I mean, Candelario, Dansby Swanson, Ian Happ, they all hit home runs for the Cubs on Saturday night. You got Mike Tauchman, former Yankee, former Rocky, who made it to your taxi squad. He's batting leadoff. And, you know, you talked about in points leagues, that's important, right? Getting a chance to play every day. Guy with a good pedigree, had a 301 career minor league batting average, moderate power and some speed to his game. Nico Hoerner went up 9 slots to 58 on your hitter list, second baseman for the Cubs. You know, love his plate discipline. I'm just curious. He's 10 slots up from Ha-Seong Kim, second baseman for the Padres, who's been on fire as well. But Kim went up 32 slots, and he's at the top of your tier 9 at number 68. So I guess we could, you know, just stop there, and there may be another one or two Cubbies that we'll talk about, maybe Dansby Swanson. But talk to me about Tauchman. I know you're not really high on him, you're more of a streaming kind of guy, but it seems you're high on Nico Hoerner.
Yeah, and I continue to be high on Nico Hoerner, who, you know, he's never going to give you that much power, right? But it looks like he might get to like 35-ish stolen bases on the season.
Yeah, already,
Hitting 274. I think he's going to probably get close to 90 runs scored, maybe a little more if this offense continues to perform the way it has. I don't think he can get to 100, but I think he could threaten it maybe. He is great for points leagues because while he doesn't walk a ton, he almost never strikes out. 12.9% strikeout rate this season, about in line with his career. 6.1% walk rate, about in line with his career. So the batting average is always going to be something I think that stays up. The power, again, doesn't have a lot of it, but doesn't need it. He should still be able to hit 10-ish home runs, like getting the low double digits. And he's an incredibly consistent guy. And, you know, when I look at Ha-Seong Kim, it's not as though I think that, you know, Horner's like way better than Ha-Seong Kim, but Ha-Seong Kim has struggled. Like, this is the first time we've seen Ha-Seong Kim perform at the level of what we see from Nico Hoerner, who, I mean, last season was also quite good. Had 10 home runs, 20 stolen bases, again, 281 average. It's, you know, he's better in, you know, Nico Hoerner is better in standard leagues and OBP because the OBP is like fine. It's going to probably stay below 330 or so because he doesn't walk that much, but yeah, big fan of Nico Hoerner. And then with Ha-Seong Kim, I mean, the big change for Ha-Seong Kim, yes, he's hitting better, but the real change is hitting first. Hitting first in the Padres lineup to continue to stay hot, right? I mean, it's Kim, and then it's Tatis Jr., Soto, Machado, Bogaerts, who I don't love. But like that is, it's nice to have those guys behind you, right? It means Ha-Seong Kim is going to get pitches to hit all the time. Because he's the one that, you know, at least probably won't hit a home run against you, mm-hmm. right? Like, got to attack Ha-Seong Kim.
He has 15 home runs this season. I mean, 15 home runs, 24 stolen bases. I mean, it looks like he's finally figured it out. Like, he had a really good career. Was it from Japan, right?
Korea. He's Korea, from KBO. Right.
I apologize. Yeah. It looks like he's, I've been waiting for this for a few years from him. And like you said, he's got those big boppers behind him this season. If he's somebody that I would target in trades, in redraft leagues.
Yeah. And the power remains a big surprise simply because he doesn't hit the ball that hard. Right. He doesn't barrel it up hardly ever. Right. Career high barrel rate of 5.8% this season. That's not very high. Right. Mm-hmm. But he is getting the home runs. He does pull the ball quite a bit. So that's probably why he's doing it. Hard to project how many home runs he'll hit the rest of the way. I think he probably caps out around 20. I do think he could potentially end the season being better than Nico Horner. Right. I'm not sure how much longer the batting average will stay as high as it is for Ha-Seong Kim. Ha-Seong Kim, basically, just the reason he's not even higher than this is just a little bit of risk. Mm-hmm. Right? It's just a little bit of risk where, he could take a little bit of a step back, right? And still be very, very good. I think he is someone to target. People have asked, should I sell high on Ha-Seong Kim? You're not going to get a return that matches what I think you'll get from Ha-Seong Kim the rest of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I definitely think he's a hold, but if someone thinks they're selling high, you should absolutely go for it.
Most of the projection models think he's 5 or 6 more home runs and 6 or 7 more stolen bases for the rest of the season.
Yeah. And the thing is, those same projection models think he's going to hit 250 instead of the 286.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you look at combined home runs and steals, I think mm-hmm. with Horner and Kim, you see the same amount of combined home runs and steals. It's just split up a little differently. With Horner, it's like 3 or 4 more home runs and like 7 to 9 stolen bases. Mm-hmm. And with Kim, it's just evenly split between home runs and stolen bases. Projections wise, the big difference is just 20 to 30 points of batting average for Horner that Kim doesn't have. Both of them are, bat near at or near the top of the order. Both of them are fairly young players. Kim is 27, close to 28. Horner is 26. So both very interesting. I kind of expect their rankings to become very close together. And mm-hmm. your real preference will be, can you take on the batting average risk? Not real risk. Like, Kim is not going to hurt your batting average. He just might not have as good of one as Nico Horner. And then it just becomes like, which do you need more? Do you need more steals than home runs, or is the split better for you?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, how do you want to play it? Or even like ranking them week to week is really tough just because I think they offer overall a very similar outcome, just right. in slightly different ways. So yeah, big fan. And again, the whole Cubs team, I mean, Ian Happ has been maddening because he goes on these terrible slumps, which is weird for a guy like him who walks a ton, doesn't strike out that much, not overly aggressive. I mean, he's a very patient hitter. He just goes on these terrible stretches and then turns around, gets really, really hot. He's really like, Ian Happ is really volatile, which is just weird for a player with his profile. It's very bizarre. And the Cubs have several guys I have a hard time like really making heads or tails of. Him and Cody Bellinger are just guys where I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get why these guys are so volatile. I don't get why things change so dramatically for them with very little changes to how they're playing. It's just, they're just better for mm-hmm. a while and then they're worse. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So, that's kind of interesting. I think Christopher Morel's on this team. I know why he's up and down. He just goes through bouts of bad decision making.
Dansby Swanson's been hot lately, and he went up 20 slots on your hitter list. It looks like he's finally getting it going more consistently. 7 home runs, 17 RBI over the past month.
Yeah, except for the stolen bases, would it be that mm-hmm. weird if he kind of had similar results to what he had for Atlanta last season? So last season with Atlanta, 25 home runs. I mean, the thing that'll be different is I don't expect Swanson to get close to 99 runs scored and 96 RBI or 18 stolen bases. Bring all those down, but I think the power output can be very similar. I think the batting average can be very similar. It was 277 last year, 263 this year. So rest of the way, I wouldn't be that surprised if he hit above 270. He could hit as many as like 8 or 9 more home runs. That's what the bat and the bat X think. So you know, Swanson is a guy who I think could be very solid. He's been a bit disappointing, I think, for fantasy managers this season. But I do think there is hope for the future, right? I think he could end the season with like 25 home runs, 7-ish stolen bases, and a good batting average. He's walking a lot more, which is kind of nice for OBP leagues. Not that you got him for that purpose, but Dansby Swanson, yeah, I think he looks and feels a lot more like the Dansby Swanson we had before. And with this team hitting better, hitting fifth for the Cubs is a lot, you know, hitting fifth for the Cubs, the way we talk about it today is a lot different than the way we talked about hitting fifth for the Cubs back in April and May, right? It wasn't that attractive of a prospect then. It's very attractive now.
Yep. Yeah. And I said 7 home runs, 17 RBI over the past month for Dansby Swanson. It's actually only over this past 14 games, but you must have been on the IL earlier because he's only played 14 games in the last month. But good stuff as always from you, Scott. I guess that kind of slams the lid on things for this week, Scott. We'll be looking for the updated hitter list in the middle of the week when it comes out. As always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. And we'll see you next time.